Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hey, everybody, it's your favorite funny girl, Amanda Seals, and I want to tell you about an incredible experience I had. I sat down with LeVar Burton recently on his podcast to talk about my new book, Small Doses, to talk about Black literature, and to talk about a special story, a short story that we both read called Mammy. I had a great time speaking with LeVar because, as you all know, he's the pinnacle for me. We're talking Kunta Kinte. We're talking Jordi LaForge. We're talking Reading Rainbow, okay? So when I was speaking with him, it was as if butterflies were in the sky. And I went twice as high. So I'm releasing the episode for free for y'all to listen to. Because I rock with you and you rock with me. And you know we all rock with LeVar. I really can't recommend enough that you check out LeVar's show on Stitcher, LeVar Burton Reads. The episode I did with him was a premium episode because we premium players. You can get a free month of Stitcher Premium if you sign up with the code LeVar at StitcherPremium.com. So enjoy the episode. Go check out LeVar's podcast. And if you're interested in Stitcher Premium, it's StitcherPremium.com with code LEVAR. Ooh, it's a good one. I hope y'all enjoy.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and Amanda Seals.
It's so funky. It is happening. Small Doses, the book, is coming to you on Tuesday, October 22nd. Oh my goodness, I can't even believe it. But before then, you can come and check me out in Los Angeles at Book Soup on Saturday, October 19th at 4 p.m., where I'll be doing a live book signing. So you can come and get your book signed by yours truly, get a picture, all that good stuff. And if you cannot make it out, on October 22nd, we'll be having a live streamed book signing where you can order your book on our live stream and I will sign it right there in front of you on the camera and have it sent to you. Yes, we are definitely trying to do everything we can in our power to make sure that you guys out there listening, even if you can't physically come to see me, can still get a signed book or can still get some engagement as we unleash, as we let the world know about Small Doses, Potent Truths for Everyday Use. So make sure that you get your pre-order in at smalldoses.com. Make sure if you're in LA that you come on out on October 19th, that's this Saturday, to come and check me out at Book Soup, that's 4 p.m. And if you are not able to do any of that, make sure that you are with us on October 22nd. Check out my Instagram for the details so that you can be there for the live book signing. So excited, y'all. It's gonna be major.
Hey y'all, welcome to the first episode of a special series I'm doing called Stories with Friends. It's kind of like a podcast book club. In each one of these episodes, I'm asking a friend to bring a piece of fiction for us to talk about, something that's really resonated deeply with them. And we'll end up talking about their reading habits, the power of the written word, and a whole lot more. So if you want to follow along with this week's story pick, you'll want to check out the story Mammy by Dorothy West. It's been collected in a couple of books, and we've got links to those collections in the episode description right here. And my guest today is Amanda Seals. She's a stand-up comedian, actress, and a writer. You may know her as Tiffany Dubois on HBO's Insecure, and as the creator, host of LA's hit live Black culture game show, Smart, Funny, and Black. She also hosts a podcast called Small Doses, and she's written a new book out on October 22nd called, what else? Small Doses, Potent Truths for Everyday Use. Small Doses is comprised of essays, thoughts, and stories connected to Amanda's own personal, humorous methodology for living life. I'm so excited to introduce you to my friend Amanda because for me, she is not only fiercely intelligent, she is committed to making a difference in life through her art, with her craft. And I so admire anyone who takes absolute responsibility for the content that they create and wants their impact, their footprint, to be one of meaning in this world. Let's hear my conversation with Amanda Seales. I was, am, and continue to be an Amanda Seales fan.
I will never get used to that. So I don't know if that flatters you or concerns you, but I will never get used to hearing that.
It's true. Let's talk short stories.
Let's talk short stories.
So
I read several for this.
You did?
Yes.
Well, I didn't mean for the process to be stressful.
It wasn't stressful. And honestly, it was very like, how you got so many short stories and short story books in your house and you haven't read all of them?
So what do you think of the form, the genre? Short story.
Short story is very similar to sketch.
Yeah?
It's very similar to comedy sketch.
How so?
Because you've got to get a premise across in a very finite, you know, amount of time. And there has to be enough of a turn at the end for it to have made the reader feel like this was worthwhile. You know, because in a longer form, there's so much more space that even if the ending isn't great, you may have got some stuff through. It's not like an M. Night Shyamalan film. You may have got some stuff in the midst, you know? Because if an M. Night Shyamalan film doesn't get you at the end, you're like, why did we do this?
Right.
Why?
That's 2 hours of my life. I shall never recover.
It was a mist? What you mean it was a mist the whole time? You know? Like, so in the short story form, it's just like sketch where like that hitch has to hit you.
Yeah.
It has to hit you or else it just feels like, well, you just didn't want to write a book.
Yeah.
And so with the story that I chose, the hitch hit me later. And that was what I was reading. I had read two other stories after I read this one and was in the middle of a third story. And then the hitch hit me and it caught me in my neck.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that's the one.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, I got it. Because at first I finished it and was like, ugh, she could have just read a book. And I had to go back and be like, is this an excerpt? What? And so then when it hit me, I was like, oh. And then it also hit me on a number of levels because it also hit me in how it applies to a bigger conversation about society, how it applies to a bigger conversation about the Black community,
right.
How it applies to a bigger conversation about what we as our individual selves choose to be our own ethics.
Mm.
Ba-dum-bum.
What did you read as a child? I mean, what was the first body of literature that you were drawn to?
Anything Judy Blume.
Ah, Judy Blume fan.
Anything Judy Blume.
Right.
Beverly Cleary.
Yes.
I would also read books that I learned from reading Rainbow. Like, that was a big thing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, okay, Mom, get me that one in the Scholastic. When the Scholastic book bus comes. A Scholastic book fair was like, this is a party.
Who doesn't remember?
Listen, my nostalgia self, excuse me, I wouldn't be surprised if you just come up on a birthday party that looks like a Scholastic book fair. Like, that's something I feel like I would do. And people would be like, oh, my God.
Right?
You know, when they would have, like, the big Clifford the Red Dog and... what else was I reading? Babysitter's Club, Boxcar Kids. And I was a reader.
Mm.
I was a very avid reader, and I don't get to read that much at this point in my life. And I've started, you know, it's unfortunate that this was the catalyst, but with Toni Morrison's passing, I've forced myself, like, you better get back into this book. And I actually like stopped myself this weekend and gave an hour to reading. And I know that might not seem like a lot to folks, but it just kind of has to get put back on your schedule.
It does.
When I lived in New York and I'm riding the train,
yeah,
it was an easier thing to just kind of integrate into my lifestyle. But I started reading Sula again. Because I had a college professor. When we read Sula, I was a freshman. I was a sophomore in college.
Where'd you go?
I went to SUNY Purchase for undergrad and Columbia for grad.
And Columbia for grad, right.
And in undergrad, she was like, you know, without giving the story away, Sula does something in the book that is like, very like, oh, wow, that is a strong choice. And all of us in the class were just horrified. We're all Black girls in this class, all right? And we were all just like, this is just, she is trifling. And our professor was like, one day you will understand. And so I was like, you know what, let me read this book again and see if I understand. Let me see if that day has come.
And?
Because it's 20 years later. And you know what? I haven't reached the part in the book yet. Okay. I know it's coming.
Right.
But I think I understand.
Already.
I do.
Yeah.
Because at that age, everything is very black and white.
Sure.
And I'm getting to a much more, not gray area, but just that.
Layered.
Layered.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some things are black with a purple tinge. You know, there's just things, some things are just not, I mean, and people know me to be a very decisively like, this is right and this is wrong. Mm. But I think that what ends up being the gray area is like, what is the intention? Like, right. What is the intention? And also like, what is this person's history? How did they get here? Like, because what I may look at and think is their intention could become very different when I know the background of how they got here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Everybody's story matters, doesn't it? In terms of how we hold them.
And it's taxing.
Yeah. It's work.
That's why I only have like 6 people on my on my caller, like speed call now.
Right.
Speed dial. Because like you get older and you're just like, I can't even carry all y'all stories.
Mm.
Like, but reading and bringing it back into my life has been really great. I went to school for, originally as an acting major. Mm-hmm. And then I created a Black Studies major because they didn't have one at the school at the time. So I created Black Studies with a concentration in the visual and performing arts. And then I was an African-American Studies major at Columbia. So I got to have a wealth of specifically African-American literature
right.
in my craw. And then I went to Dr. Phillips High School in Orlando.
Hmm.
And I had incredible English teachers. So I really have had just like a great life of literature. My mother is a lover of literature. She's a bibliophile. It's not even just a lover of literature. She wants the physical book. My mom will not read my book until I give her the physical book.
She doesn't want any.
I sent her the digital
copy.
And she was like, you know, mans, I want to touch it. I was like, I need you to read it to make sure I didn't play myself. I literally sent my book out to like a bunch of people. I was like, I just need y'all to let me know if I played myself. Because
yeah.
I started reading Souls of Black Folk again.
Okay.
And as I started rereading W.E.B. Du Bois' Souls of Black Folk, I had to put it down.
You got like, more and more militant?
Well, I just was like, have I contributed to the cultural canon? Because I don't want to have not contributed to the cultural
yes.
canon.
Yes.
Because that's how I really feel about this art.
Yeah.
If I'm not contributing to the canon, I need to pause. And I have created stuff that was like, you know what? This is not a contribution to the canon.
Yeah.
We're going to have to, let's come up with something new.
Wow.
And so I caught myself and I sent it to my professor, Donna Davis, who was the person who shaped my like academic ideology.
Okay.
And who was the person who really informed me of the concept that pop culture is a part of our social makeup
mm-hmm.
and can be academic and can be very much a indicator of like what society is doing and how we're moving
mm-hmm.
and especially pop culture as an integral part of Black culture,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to her and she was like, you know, send it to me. And then she didn't respond. And you all, when I tell you that I, for 3 weeks in the back of my mind was just like, so I guess she doesn't like it. You know, like she didn't say anything. She hasn't responded. So I guess, you know, it's like, it's fine. I mean, but you know, like, I mean, she could have responded. She could have said something, but it's fine. And on that call, the original call, she had said that she had never flown first class. We were just talking and she had said she had never flown first class. And I was like, well, that's what I'm going to do for you. Because you are one of my greatest professors of all time. I'm going to upgrade you to first class on your next international flight. So she was going to Spain, and so I upgraded her to first class on her flight. And so I got the notice about the flight,
right.
and I texted her and said, have a great trip.
Right.
Really glad that I could help make the experience better. And she was like, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I love the book. I'm sorry, what?
Huh.
I called her immediately.
Right?
And I was like, Professor Davis, what do you, she wants me to call her Donna, and I just can't.
Right.
Professor Davis, what do you mean? She's like, well, I sent you several emails. Now, the machines don't want us to win, y'all, okay? The machines don't want us to win. And she had sent them in the thread, and the first email said, thank you.
right.
for the book, but that's all it said. So I never opened it because I read it and it said, thank you.
There were all these stacked up behind
it. She had emailed me while she was reading it and was like, oh my God, I love this line. Oh, this is great. Da-da-da. She was like, Amanda, I read your book in a day and a half. She's like, I never read anything that fast. I was like, I fell to my knees and whipped.
Yeah.
I whipped.
Yes.
And that was like, okay. And my uncle had said to me, Amanda, because he's a judge in Grenada, Amanda, you know, a book is a deposition. A book is a deposition. So edit it and edit it twice.
Wisdom. That's wisdom.
Listen, thank goodness he said that to me, because when I read it the second time, I realized how many times I had taken for granted that someone would just know what I mean. And I'm writing material in this book that is so
personal.
Some of it is personal. Some of it is just, some of it is political.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
It's specific, so that in the sense that if it's specific, you can't get general.
Right.
With what you mean.
Mm-mm.
And so I was glad that he had given me that because I was like, oh, I just saved myself from so much trolling.
Mm-hmm.
My book is like a Bible for trolls.
Okay.
It's literally like if there's a troll workshop, they're going to be like, we don't need anything else on the syllabus but Amanda Seals' book.
Amanda Seals' book.
Yeah, we about to hit her up. Hashtag. So, because, you know, at this point, I feel like the concept of philosophizing,
mm-hmm.
the concept of thinking about things to get to a further advancement
mm-hmm.
is getting lost.
It's over. I'm over thinking about it.
People don't want to think.
I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't want to discuss.
Right.
They don't want to consider.
Mm.
You know, everyone seems to just be landing at these like really bottom line points. You know, people are writing thoughtless thought pieces.
Mm.
You know, and it says to me that like we're not even using our human brains at the full extent of their capabilities when we do that. When we see these awesome videos, like, well, you see, they always share these videos of like Baldwin just like speaking,
mm-hmm.
right? But he's speaking, and as he's speaking, you can see the thoughts happening. You know, you can see him considering and moving, and when someone asks him a question, quantifying it in a number of ways. We see this with Muhammad Ali mm-hmm. on video. We see this with Malcolm X on mm-hmm. videos. Like, these are, people don't understand. These men weren't showing up with a script.
Right.
And answering the questions from a script. No, they were thinking about things and they were saying them as they thought about them. And they weren't always speaking in a declarative tone.
Right.
And we don't have that space anymore. It feels like everybody feels like whatever you're saying is what it is and that's it, and you could get canceled for it because how dare you. And I'm like, no, like there has to be safe spaces for intellectual conversation and thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I really listen, I try and live in that space so that other people can help enter that space and make it bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you're at the club and like two people start dancing and you're like, oh shit, make the circle bigger, make it bigger.
Yeah.
Make it bigger. Some more people gonna get in the circle.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I try and do on my Instagram.
Right.
That's what I try and do with Smart, Funny, and Black. That's what we try and do with Smart, Funny, and Black's Instagram.
Right.
I call it an intellectually lit, a space for the intellectually lit.
Uh-huh.
Because I have a lot of people tell me, especially Black folks, that when they try to speak intellectually about things on certain forums, that they are harangued,
mm-hmm.
that they are criticized,
shouted down.
Mm-hmm. And I have a segment on the Smart, Funny, and Black Instagram called A Word from Our Headmaster Blackspurt. And I used to do it just me like ranting about something, but I was like, well, I do enough of that on my Instagram, on my own Instagram. Like, we need to do something unique for the Smart, Funny, and Black page. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll do something that's just like taking like Black colloquialisms and like speaking about them because, you know, it's funny and bring them funny. And our social media master, she was like, you know, though I think that would be funny, what's interesting is that we get such a response from people on the page whenever we talk about like history or serious topics
mm-hmm.
because it feels like they don't really get to do that.
Yes.
They don't really get to have intellectual conversation
anywhere else in their lives.
So she was like, I think if there's a way that you can kind of integrate that. And so now what we do, because people always talk about my vocabulary.
Yes.
So now what we do with A Word from My Headmaster Blackspurt is I teach a word.
Good.
And so the word, like we've done surreptitious.
Mm-hmm.
We've done deleterious.
Mm-hmm.
We've done pyrrhic.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great was the response was exactly what we thought. Whereas, like, I use my humor
right
to teach this word and to help enhance, you know, people's vocabulary. And people are thankful for it. And then we ask people to use it in a sentence.
Yeah.
So you'll have people in the sentence be like, like, yeah, my homegirl thought she was being surreptitious when she tried to steal my man. But I love it because that's the beauty of blackness too. Yes. It's just our ability to create words and to change and innovate and advance.
And imbue with flavor.
With flavor. Like just the amount of seasoning that was put on that surreptitious was not surreptitious at all.
Not at all.
And so that, you know, that's what reading has been able to do in my work. Is like even just having those words.
Yeah. So we're talking about Dorothy West's story, Mammy, and even the title, right? Even the title is not neutral.
No.
And without giving away, because I really do want you to read this story yourself. Before you listen to this conversation, I want you to have read this story. So without giving anything away, it's about a social worker, basically, who is on a visit following up on a claim that's been made by a woman of color who is a domestic.
Yes.
And works for a white woman and her family.
A rich Southern white woman who's now living in she's living in the Upper West Side.
In the Upper West Side.
I think that's an important.
You're absolutely right. It is. It is. And it's an important distinction. She is very wealthy.
And Southern.
And she says at one point, this woman, I've had Mammy in my life all my life. Or words to that effect.
Yes.
Right? With no
irony,
no self-consciousness about it at all. And because the story is written through the eyes of this black woman social worker, we really do feel the shock and the insult that feels like to this black woman, to have this white woman be so unconsciously
possessive
over someone, over another human being.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that it is tied to her continued desire to possess her.
That's correct.
It's not just I've had Mammy in my life all my life. It's and I still want Mammy in my life because my daughter
needs her. Right. Needs her.
My daughter
needs her.
So she can't
have her own life. And I must say that what we discover in the story is that Mammy has left. Mammy has made a decision that she wants to live the rest of her life uptown with people who look like her. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want to have to be responsive to the needs of anyone else in her life.
And so she has applied for relief, which was the former name for welfare.
Yes. Public assistance.
Right. She's applied for relief so that she can
retire.
Support herself and
exactly.
retire.
Exactly. Exactly.
And apparently the protocol was that the social worker needs to go and confer with the employer. And I guess what I inferred from it was that Mammy had said she was fired.
Yes.
And so you can get relief if you've been fired, but not if you quit.
That's correct.
And so she was going to just, you know.
It was pro forma.
She literally thought she was going in there to just lickety-split, skippity-doo-dah.
Yep. This all seems very, very.
Open and shut case, Johnson.
Open and shut.
Yes.
But it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't.
And it wasn't from the moment she got in the elevator.
That's the truth.
And so that, you know, when the hitch hit me.
Yes.
It was because I had forgotten about the elevator.
Ah.
And then it hit me because it was, oh, there was a hypocrisy there.
Yes.
There's a relationship to elitism there that this social worker didn't realize for her that she had played into.
Yes.
And that she was advancing.
A part of it.
Mammy realized it.
Yes.
You can't just da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
No, it's my job.
Right.
It's my job.
It's my job.
And you know, I had a situation happen recently where I was escorted out of a party unjustly by security guards who had been—
Oh, you mean escorted out?
Oh, yeah. Four security guards escorted me out of a party because I was, quote unquote, not on the list for a Black Emmy party.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Oh.
Wait a minute. You're Amanda Seales.
Like, which doesn't mean much in some spaces, but in a Black Emmy party space, like, there's value there.
There's certainly enough value so that even though your name might not be on the list, you are welcome.
It would be seen as an oversight.
In this space. Exactly right. Exactly.
It was seen as an oversight.
Yeah, sure.
So I was escorted out by four security guards, one of which who was very kind, I will say. And he kept saying, "I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm just doing my job. I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm just doing my job." And I'd never pull the "do you know who I am" card because we just don't do that.
No, we don't.
But in this moment, when we got outside on the curb, I said, "I want you to look me up." Because there are times when we're doing our job and it literally is just that, like we're following an order.
Yeah.
But the reality is that much of the ire and the foulness that has been had that has happened in this world and in history mm-hmm. has been by people doing their job,
mm-hmm.
by people who are carrying out the orders of others
mm-hmm.
who are simply just handing down
dictums.
These, mm-hmm. yeah, these malintentions.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so even though you're doing your job, you're going to Google me and you're going to see how dumb
mm-hmm.
you look and how foolish these people had you be, the foolery that people had you be involved in.
A part of.
And yeah. I said, what happens is that when we just say, I'm just doing my job, what we're doing is we are trying to remove ourselves, we're trying to absolve ourselves from the individual agency that we have to make good decisions.
Right.
And sometimes you got to be like, hold on, bros, let's discuss this. But you know what? Money make the world go around. And a lot of times people just really let money take them down a road. And in Mammy's story, like there's, and you can't judge, but you have to judge. And I hate that people talk about like, I don't judge. I'm like, BS.
Yeah.
It's not that you don't judge. You just judge based on different metrics.
Yeah.
And you can have good judgments and bad judgments.
As we all do.
We judge all day. You got to judge your distance to parallel park.
Yes.
You know, you're mm-hmm. judging if somebody, you're judging, if you're in New York, you have to judge which side of the block you're going to walk down. Because if they playing dice on this side,
mm-hmm.
but they're just standing on the corner smoking on this side, I'm going to walk down the dice block because they're not going to holler at me because they don't want to take their
mind
eyes
off the
money.
Game. That's right.
So I'm going to do the dice block.
Right.
At the same time, you have to judge.
How many people guessed the other way?
Exactly. That means that you need to work on your street smarts because, let me tell you, if they play in the game, you're good. But this judgment, you got to make judgment calls, man.
Yeah.
We make judgment calls all day
all
about
day.
People, about what's, and it all ends up being, to me, it all ends up being about what's safe for you.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up at the end of the day being an instinctual, like, safety thing.
Right.
And who you determine to be in your circle. As parents, I feel like a lot of parents are trying to teach their kids, like, to have keen sense of judgment for their own personal safety. Don't hang out with those kids.
Right.
They're gonna get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. Don't run in the street. You're gonna mm-hmm. get hit. Don't put your hand on that. It's hot.
Mm-hmm.
It's judgment calls.
Right.
But as adults and as individuals with agency, some of our judgment calls are gonna be about like saving a life.
Right.
Changing a life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about helping someone. We make a judgment call when we pull up to a corner and decide, is this person worth my dollar?
Mm-hmm.
Does this person look destitute enough for my dollar?
Mm-hmm.
What are the rules that I come up with to decide on whether or not I'm going to help this other human?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everyone has their rules.
Right. We all do.
And no one wants to be judged upon their rules.
Yeah, right.
But at the end of the day, you got to look at your rules.
We all must be held accountable for our rules.
So our friend in this story was holding someone else accountable for their rules,
yes.
and she wasn't looking at her own.
She was not.
And it hit me three stories later. They called this woman Mammy, and she didn't even care. What?
Right.
Because it was her job.
Yeah.
So now Mammy got to go back downtown. Because it was her job.
Because it was her job.
And you just wonder, you know, there's the people who change this world are the people who figure out how to make their job work for the people.
Yeah.
And not just work for the money. I'm on it today.
Yes, you are, Amanda
Seales. I got
Seales.
The lines today, y'all. But I really believe that.
No,
you look at Schindler's List
right,
and it's like he
right.
could have said, like, listen, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, though? With this job, I could do so
I
much
could
more.
Do so much more good for other people.
So.
Where there is a need, right? Where there's a need for light.
There's always a need for light. You can't give all your light to everybody,
right.
but
You can bifurcate it a little bit, you know.
Share it.
Prism.
Yeah.
Give it a little slice of the prism, you know.
So, well, how about we do that? How about, here's a spoiler alert, right? If you have not yet read the story, put it on pause. Otherwise, we're going to reveal some of the twists and turns that happen in the Dorothy West story.
We gonna delve.
Delving into Mammy. Delving into Mammy.
That
and all
like
that entails.
That's quite a film. That's, yeah.
Not to be confused with Driving Miss Daisy. Mm. Right?
Because that's a whole other.
It's a whole other thing. So, Mammy, it's the protagonist is a social worker, right? We talked about how she is on, she's doing her job. She's literally carrying out the function of her job, going out on this to interview, to verify this claim that's come in. But it nothing is as it seems.
No.
Right? I mean, it all seems so cut and dried, but life rarely is.
The story, because even in the way that it's written, you know, that she walks in mm-hmm. and she sees the elevator controller, mm-hmm. the elevator operator, and that he's
young
a brother.
Young black man.
And she is relieved.
Right.
Because she's in a part of town that is predominantly white, and she feels uncomfortable already.
She's a black woman in white space.
Yes. In a time period that is like the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already like, okay, I know I got to move a certain way in this space.
Right.
And a white woman got on the elevator with her. And when she, a white woman got on the elevator first. And when she got on the elevator, she thought that she would be welcomed
right.
by the black elevator operator. And so the fact that he admonished her and like embarrassed her by saying like, you need to go take the service elevator. She was done for.
Right.
Like she was like, this is... You know, and I would have felt the same way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, it would have been like, how dare you? Because as a black person in this country, I just feel like there's an unspoken camaraderie that many of us feel.
A shared experience.
And when you are...
That experience being black in America.
Being black in America right. and all that comes along with it, right. which in many cases has been oppression, suppression,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that for me personally, I have a personal onus that says, like, if I can help us out in a situation, I'm going to help us out.
Right.
So if that means that I see a brother pulled over by the cops, like, I'm going to pull over and
pull
be a
camera.
Presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that means making sure that I'm being conscious about hiring practices
right.
and making sure that I'm opening the space,
mm-hmm.
Then there's that. If that means... In my art, making sure that I'm making like responsible art that speaks to our experience in a authentic way. There's that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this moment, you know, we see that our social worker felt left out.
Yeah.
Right? She felt like she didn't. She felt that she was not being taken care of
mm-hmm.
in that way. And I felt like she was right for feeling that way.
I agree.
But what's wild is when she comes back in the elevator. And he's like, I apologize.
Yeah.
I was just doing my job. Because that white woman that was in the elevator was so shady. She's yeah. so mean.
She's
and
so mean. She just got a guy fired, a black man. You see, we have a white doorman now.
Right.
We used to have a black one, but this woman got him fired.
So I'm sorry I had to throw you under the bus.
I'm trying to protect my job.
And she wasn't hearing it, though.
No, she gave him no quarter. She gave him no slack. She didn't even look at him.
None.
For the entire ride down.
So then in terms of her and that conversation with the woman.
Yes.
It was interesting because when I was reading it, and I want to know what you think about this. Like when I was reading it, I felt like she was listening to this woman with a side eye.
Mm.
I didn't necessarily think that she was taking everything the woman said as bar none. And maybe I need to read it again. I think that she was, because even when the woman called Mammy, she was like, okay.
Yeah.
But do you think that over the course of the conversation that she was moved by this woman into feeling that they had genuine...
Need?
Well, care. Because when she went to go talk to Mammy,
yeah.
she was like, they care about you.
They
what are you talking about? They love you. Mammy's like, they got me sitting in a box behind the kitchen. What are you talking about?
Right.
And she's like, no, they love you.
They love you.
But then Mammy was saying some things.
I gotta say, the turn that happens in this story is unusual in that A, for whatever reason, I did not see it coming, and B, the weight of it, the reality of it, floored me.
When she referenced her daughter?
Yes.
Because she's being taken away from her life for this woman's, like, daughter. She's like, my daughter. And Mammy's like, well, you know, that's my daughter. That was my daughter. Right. Was.
Right. That was my daughter. Right. Because, and she's looking at a picture of this woman uptown. Is she not? Yeah. That was her daughter.
Wait, what?
Yes, that's not how you read it?
No! Tell me more!
Oh, Amanda Seals.
I missed that. So I thought she was talking about her own daughter because so many black mothers.
No. Because the social worker picks up the photo and says, oh, that's a picture of a young, what's the woman's name? Mrs. Mason, I think, right? Mrs. Coleman, right? She says, that's a young Mrs. Coleman. And Mammy responds, that was my daughter.
So do we take that literal or figurative?
I took it literally that her daughter was passing and that she lived there with her daughter and her granddaughter, but that her daughter had
Given birth to a dark-skinned baby.
Her granddaughter had, yes. So I believe, that Mammy was the mother of the rich white lady uptown.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I read it.
Am
I wrong?
Didn't take it that way.
Am I wrong?
Well, just in a literal, like, Southern sense.
I get it.
I took it as, like,
figurative daughter.
No, I think I may have overlooked when she said that looks like a young Miss Mason.
Ah.
And I think I may have skipped over that.
Ooh.
And just went to, that was my daughter. Just in the sense that so many black mothers had to raise white children and not their own children.
Right. That's right.
And so in my mind, it was just more so like looking at the social worker because the social worker saw that and was just like, I got to do my job. And it's like, oh, so you didn't even get compelled by that.
Oh, I did.
Not you. I'm saying the social worker didn't even get compelled by that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so you're still stuck in this, I gotta do my job. And, you know, essentially, like, Mammy is being treated as, like, you gotta just do your job.
Yeah.
Which ends up just being a whole story about black folks having to work for white people.
Yes.
Against their will, right. Even though slavery is done.
Purported.
Like, doing things, well, touche, on paper. Mm-hmm. But doing things, having to work.
Mm.
In ways that don't feel right to them.
For you, right.
For you.
Well, yeah.
Right? And so I did not. Let me see that. Just let me see that.
Here. This
little girl, she said, it's Mrs. Coleman, isn't it? The old woman did not look up. Her voice was still listless. That was my daughter. See, I thought that she had just misread, that she thought this was Mrs. Coleman. And she's like, no, that's not Mrs. Coleman.
Keep reading.
The investigator dropped the photograph on the bed as if it were a hot coal.
Hmm. Right?
Blindly, she went back to the bureau, gathered up the rest of the things, and dumped them over the photograph. She was an investigator, and it was 2:55. Her job was to give or withhold relief. So basically, she just was like, this is too deep.
And I can't deal with this, right?
I've
got to do my job, and I've got to get home to my family.
But Mammy is like, I don't want to be back in that family. That woman is the devil.
And Mammy is right, because there's some there's a foulness going on there, right? Murder has taken place.
Okay, so this is what I think.
Okay, what do you think?
Okay, that was a young Mrs. Coleman.
Right?
So Mrs. Coleman, the woman who's saying, Mammy's been in my life all my life.
Yes.
was Mammy's baby.
Right.
However, Mrs. Coleman probably don't even know that Mammy is her mama.
She probably doesn't.
She don't know that Mammy is her mom.
That's correct. She thinks so, Mammy is her mammy.
And so then Mrs. Coleman's daughter had a baby.
That's correct.
And that baby came out dark-skinned.
I don't think so. There's no reference to that.
The reason why I'm saying that is because she was like, that baby didn't die.
Right. That's right.
And the mother is like distraught.
Yeah.
And the baby was removed.
The baby was. So you know what? I am in agreement with you now. I get that. I see that.
So that's why Mammy is like, that baby didn't die.
That baby didn't die. Right.
And the mother is distraught. And, you know, Ms. Coleman says she can try again.
Yes. Right.
But Mammy is like, no. And the thing is that the social worker is being so frustrated with Mammy being vague.
Right.
And I guess when she sees the picture, the vagueness comes clear and it's like,
right.
But she still kept with her job.
Stay the course. She must stay the course.
But see, that's to me when you say, well, we got to make a change. Right. Make that change.
Right, right.
We got to make a change.
Because it's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. That's it. Right. There's literally no other.
So often that thought, that part of the thought process is absent for us.
The right thing to do.
Because it's the right thing to do.
I think a lot of people don't even know what the right thing to do is.
I hope that's not true. I'd like to believe that we all have an internal compass that informs us of what is right and what is wrong. I think that one of the things that seems to be going on is we are willing to lie to ourselves.
Well, there's that.
And to the point where we begin to almost believe the lie that we're telling.
I also think, though, that there's like a selfishness that starts to skew what is the right thing to do. Because remember what I was saying about judgment calls?
Yeah.
Like, it starts to end up being simply just about, like, what's, like, not necessarily what's safe for me, but, like, what serves me?
What serves me, yeah. What will bring me the best outcome for my agenda?
Agenda is the key.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Because sometimes what brings you the best outcome might be simply about, like, this is going to make my day, or this is going to make someone else's
somebody
day.
Somebody else's
this is
day.
It's going to be altruistic.
Yeah.
Altruistic, and that's that. You know, I had an interesting situation happen recently where I was driving to work. I had a, like, really early call on Insecure. It was, like, 4:30 a.m. Was our call. It was my first day of work for season 4, and I saw a car accident had happened in front of me. And I saw that the person in the car was like moving back and forth.
They were in shock.
They were in incredible pain. Like,
pain.
You could see it.
Wow.
Like, I could just see the shadow of like someone who was like, ah.
Yeah.
And so I pulled over.
Right.
And then this brother pulled over and he was like, I'm going to go see what's going on.
Right.
And I called 911. Just a side note, 911 really is a joke. Like,
That system is broken.
Whew, I called. I said, hello, there's a car accident that's taking place. I'm on the southbound side of the 101 at the 110 South Harbor Exchange on the south side. She was like, I'm sorry, ma'am, where are you? I am on the southbound. And anyone who's listening who's from LA, you know exactly what I just said. You know exactly where I am. I just gave you latitude and longitude.
Right. You surely did.
She made me repeat this thing 4 times. And finally, I was like, is there someone else I can speak to? Because I don't know the status of this person, but they're going to die if it's going to take this long for you to find out where I am.
Yes.
And then the paramedics got on the phone and he made me do it. And I was like, you know what? I need y'all to just work it out together. I'm on the 101 southbound on the 110 side of the South Harbor. I better hear sirens soon.
Yeah.
And I got off the phone. So I went over. We did hear sirens soon, by the way.
Okay.
So I went over and the guy was like, yo, she broke her arm.
All right. The woman, the person who
the
in
person
pain.
In the vehicle broke her arm. So basically what had happened was it looked like 2 cars had hit each other. Mm-hmm. But what really happened was that she must have fallen asleep at the exchange and she hit the split.
Yep, like the embankment.
The embankment, and she spun out.
Okay.
And so she spun out and was blocking the southbound side.
Right.
Enough where cars could get around, but there was another car blocking her so that she wouldn't get hit. And that was another brother who was a security guard who was also 6'5", and He got out the car and was like, yeah, you know, I parked the car here so she won't get hit. But I called 911. They're on their way. He looked like he was on like Martin Luther King's detail. Like really? He just looked like a brother.
He
who,
could handle.
Yeah.
The
like
business,
he was sent
was.
In. He was sent in the town before it went down.
Right.
So I went to her side and I was like, you know, I hope you're okay. And I know that you're in pain. She was like, oh, my God, my arm. I said, look, I'm looking at your arm. You don't have a compound fracture. There's no blood. It looks like, you know, on a surface level, like this looks like something that could heal.
Mm-hmm. And help is on the way.
Help is on the way, you know, and I'm rubbing her back. And she looks up and she's like, is it you? And I was like, I don't know how to answer this without sounding wildly narcissistic. And I was like, yes, it is. And she was like, Amanda Sales! And I was like, let's focus on things.
Right.
She was like, tell me this. How the car look? And I was like, girl, you actually, you all right? The car's running.
Okay.
Your arm is banged up more than the car. You straight. She was like, oh my God, thank you. Oh my God, Amanda Sales, I done bust in the car. And then So now I'm just like, oh my God, like, okay, you know, because on TV shows, when you late, you mess up so many lives that day.
Sure.
And so I said out loud, like, this is my first day back at Insecure, but I wanted to stop and make sure you were okay. And then Martin Luther King's security guard was like, sister, we got this. We got this.
Right.
Then the other brother was like, she good. Okay. And I was like, you done found 2 6-foot-5 brothers on the 110 exchange on the southbound side of the 101.
At 5 o'clock in the morning.
Sister, you gonna be all right. And so, but that was one of those moments where, like, I only stopped
because it was the right
thing to do. And it ended up giving me material forever.
True.
And also, I won't lie to you, you know, if I'm being honest, like that felt good for me that in this woman's like pain and suffering, she was still like happy to see me.
Yes.
And that let me know, well, you're doing something right. But I didn't go there for that.
No, you didn't. You just stopped because that's how you were raised.
That's it.
You respond to human need. You know what I love about that story? I love everything about that story. But one of the things I noticed about that story was that here it is that early in the morning, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and three people of color stop to help a stranded motorist.
Who also happened to be a person of color.
Right.
We didn't know that. You couldn't see that from the car.
You couldn't see that from the car. So all three of you stopped because it was the right thing to do.
And each of us played different roles. Like the security guard had blocked his put his car there.
Right.
You know, the other guy, he went to go check on her.
Yes.
And then I'm calling, we just kind of fell into place.
Just black people handling shit. Basically.
And a lot of times I think that ends up happening simply because we're not accustomed to people handling shit for us.
Yes.
And so that was a very... And of course, I got to set late, and they were like, well, of course you won't be late because you're a hero. I mean, goddamn. Like, if there's any good reason to be late, I guess that's the one.
That would be the one.
But it felt, in a time that right now can feel very hopeless, if you're conscious, if you're even vaguely conscious right now, and I think it's important to add that distinction, because if you've been hella conscious, you've known that this everything has been on some BS for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're even vaguely conscious right now, you're like, I don't know, but things just kind of don't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And that lets you know how deep it is when it's so close to the surface. And so when moments like that happen, it makes you feel like, even for just a moment, like, we gonna be all right.
We're
it's like when you
right.
see videos on the Dodo where they've saved yet another pit bull from being euthanized.
Right.
And you're like, you know what? It's going to be all right. These white people is going to save these dogs. And we're going to save each other.
Right.
And it may just all add up.
It may just work. We may just pull this off.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ladies and gentlemen, with Amanda Seals in the world, we are all going to be all right.
I'm going to try.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you.
Amanda Seals, she is... smart. She is funny. And in the event you hadn't noticed, she is very, very black. She's also brilliant. Her new book, Small Doses,
Potent Truths for Everyday Use, comes out October 22nd. the literary component to my podcast, Small Doses, which is available on...
wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, wherever pods are casted.
Yep.
And you have done my podcast.
I have.
Side Effects of Reading.
Is
the episode.
I was a very willing guest, and we had a great time.
We did.
Amanda Seals, I love you. Thank you for playing.
I love you too. Thanks for having me.
We've got another conversation dropping in this feed on October 15th. So get ready, y'all. I'll see you next time, but you don't have to take my word for it.
Stitcher.
Stop and tell you.